And welcome to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Welcome back. This week we're at our regular time slot of 9 p.m. on Tuesday evenings, immediately after Ben Howe and right before Fingers Molloy. What a time slot. Mark, how you doing?
I'm good, Josh.
Yeah, we got Mark Warner back. He's a little bruised, a little hurt after his verbal tongue lashing from John Brodigan and Thomas LeDuc. How you recouping from that, Mark?
You know, Josh, I thought that, you know, Brodigan was on my side.
Well, that just goes to show you that rhinos just go for the winning side, and last week we were winning. All we do is win, Mark.
Not a rhino. There is no we're in this one.
Well, we have rumors persist on the Twitters that you are bringing another. You're looking for payback, a little retribution. You got a little rhino up your sleeve.
Yes, I do.
Well,
the rumors on Twitters, on the Twitters,
on the twit, yeah, the Twitters with a Z.
Twitters, yes, Twitters. those are true.
All right,
we have a surprise later on for you, Mr. Josh Gillespie, true conservative.
Well, it's gonna be an epic show if that is the case. But
it is going to be, because you are going to get schooled tonight.
Well, you know what? This week,
and I might just start doing that crap every week.
Oh, you think you might?
Surprise guess. Surprise! Shocker!
That could be the way Ask a Rhino plays each week, is a little surprise guest. Rhino on rhino action here. Wait a minute, that sounded bad. Anyway.
Drews, at ESPN is really hot.
Way to change the subject. You know, we share a birthday with her.
Facebook just asked me to subscribe to her Facebook feed.
And I'm sure you did right away.
I'm going to, actually.
Yeah. Now, did you hear that? We share a birthday with her.
We do.
And Lance Bass.
I'd rather not talk about that.
All right. Hey, you know, so far, the big news this week, and we don't have much time before we have to get on with the rest of the show, but John Huntsman has dropped out. Congress is returning to vote on President Obama's $1.2 trillion request. As per the Budget Control Act.
Wait, who?
Yeah, Wednesday. Actually, Congress will be voting on President Obama's $1.2 trillion request that he made at the end of December.
It won't pass the House.
No, it won't. But what are your feelings on Huntsman here? How are you feeling? Are you feeling hurt? Your rhino has left you? Has left the herd? Because I know your boy Ron Paul or Mitt Paul or Ron Romney.
You know what? Let me just go ahead and throw this out there right now.
Yeah.
From the looks of it, I might as well just get my Romney yard sign and my Romney sticker ready to go.
Oh, you've thrown in a towel. You are a rhino. You just go with whatever. Which, again, whoever's winning, much like Brodigan did last week.
Well, look who's winning.
Look, I know. I mean,
let's be serious here for a minute. I don't like Romney.
Okay.
I think he's fake. He doesn't seem real. He just seems – he's polished, okay?
He is polished.
Which there's nothing wrong with that, but there's nothing real about him when he comes out to talk to people. There's nothing real about him. It's like – no, Rick Santorum – I'm not a big fan, but he's real about when he talks to people.
And he wears a knockout sweater vest.
He has a crap load of them. That dude. That dude has a lot of sweater vests.
Yes, he does.
Rick Perry is real.
He is. He just can't remember what he's running on.
Alt is real about what he believes.
Mm-hmm.
But Mitt Romney.
I know.
That's not.
It's next man up. That's how you play in the GOP. Next man up. And since Huckabee didn't run, it's going to be Romney.
Isn't real.
I know. Well, we'll have more of this to discuss, I'm sure, in our Rhino segment. Coming up next, because we got to cut this short, because, well, since we pre-recorded it, we know what's going on. Anyway, coming up next is State Senator, Indiana State Senator Jim Banks, and then a special guest in Ask a Rhino. It's a mystery guest. Who will it be? Will Mark get schooled? Well, or will I? We shall see. Stick around for more Gillespie coming up next. Where you're listening to us here on FTRradio.com. Stick around. We'll be right back.
FTR Radio is from the right radio. Online at FTRradio.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. With us this segment is one of Indiana's rising stars, one of the top legislators to watch in the nation, according to Governing Magazine, State Senator Jim Banks. How you doing, Jim?
That's ridiculous.
What? We can't introduce you like that?
Please don't.
Oh, we're pleased to have you on the show. Your humility is, you know, is becoming, but please. Governing Magazine did recently name you as one of the top legislators to watch in the nation. They highlighted specifically, if I recall correctly, one of your bills to eliminate Indiana's inheritance tax. We're going to get down to the nitty-gritty here real quick. We want to talk about the legislature and right to work and whatnot, but I want to talk about this bill real quick that you've introduced. Tell us a little bit about it real quick.
Well, first of all, I had to spend $2,000 on a full-page ad in Governing Magazine to get them to name me a rising star. Not really. The inheritance tax is an issue that I've worked on the past two sessions. This is my second session in the Indiana General Assembly, and it's the second session in a row I've introduced legislation to eliminate Indiana's inheritance tax. I didn't know a lot about this issue before I was elected. It's not something that I thought a lot about for a lot of reasons, but as I dug into the issue, I just frankly couldn't believe how poorly Indiana ranked nationally when it comes to our state's inheritance or the so-called death tax. Wall Street Journal published an editorial last year during the legislative session timed with a hearing that we had on the issue and said that we rank the third worst state in the country for our combined state and federal inheritance taxes. And there's another group, a conservative legislative organization that I belong to called ALEC that ranks us dead last. And it's not just so much that it's a bad tax, but in Indiana, it's overly complicated. It ranges anywhere from 1% of an inheritance all the way up to 20% of an inheritance based on the relation of the descendant to the heir. So Josh, while my daughter might be taxed less when I pass away, if I wanted to give you my inheritance, you would be taxed up in that 20% bracket. And while that's never going to happen.
No, you're not going to give me any money? Okay.
No, right. I'm not going to leave you any money. It does.
As long as you don't leave Mark Warner any money.
Of course not. would never even think of it.
Okay, good.
But it does raise a lot of issues with, fundamentally, when you think about this is a tax that's being levied against wealth that has been taxed all of your life, and then is taxed again when you die, when you pass it on to the next generation or whoever that is that you might leave that money to. So it's an issue that we fought last year. We ran into a brick wall. I suspect that brick wall is still there this session, although there is a piece of good legislation that one of my colleagues has that would try to dig into the tax and make it less complicated, less onerous, based on the different tiers, but at the end of the day, it's a tax that Indiana needs to eliminate. Ohio just eliminated their inheritance tax last year under their new governor, and while I'm not going to say that our current governor is for or against eliminating the inheritance tax. It just hasn't been one of his priorities.
Sure.
Our next governor, hopefully Mike Pence, I know this will be a priority for him to eliminate the tax from what I understand. So that's at least that's my hope, and I hope I can be a part of that effort when he's elected.
Well, speaking of our current governor, he's made right to work one of his priorities this session, which it wasn't last session, but he's actually on air here in Indiana. And Mitch Daniels has gone all in on right to work, and that caused Democrats to walk out again here in Indiana for a few days, and then they eventually returned. What's the status of right to work in the Senate, and how do we see this playing out in the General Assembly, and how will this affect other legislation throughout the course of this short session, which ends in March?
Well, those are all good questions that I don't have a good answer for.
Oh,
there's so much that's unknown at this point. Today yeah. is King Jr. Day, of course.
And yes.
So we're most of us are back home. I'm at my house. I just put my 2-year-old to bed, and before I joined you all, I'm going to head down to the State House early in the morning to kick off the week. I understand that tomorrow, right to work will be heard on the floor for what we call our second reading, which is when it's subject to amendments on the floor of the House. And I understand that there are numerous amendments, so they'll be debating this probably well into the late hours of the night. Debating different amendments, and then after the amendment process is through, then it will be eligible for a final third reading vote on Thursday on the House side. On the Senate side, I think there's a little bit of a wait and see approach to see what happens on the House side, in hopes that the Democrats stay in their seats and participate in the process. And I hope that I'll have an opportunity to do the same thing this week to move the process forward and get through the second reading process and get it to a final vote, hopefully sometime in the next week. It's hard to say. I mean, there are literally hundreds of other issues that have arisen in this session, some good, some really bad issues from the perspective of a conservative like me. Yet all of those issues are overshadowed by the right to work issue. And if the Democrats do walk out again, of course, many of those issues, some very good, important issues for our state, will die with right to work. I hope that doesn't happen. At this point, there's no indication that that will happen. So hopefully we can move the process forward, pass a right to work law, become the 23rd state in the country with as a right to work state, which I believe is good for Indiana for many reasons, and move on to other issues that matter.
What other issues are you hoping that the General Assembly can tackle outside of, obviously, inheritance tax and right to work? You said you had a couple of bills that you have on the plate this year.
Yeah, I've got a couple of education-related bills that will be heard in committee on Wednesday. I serve on the Senate Education Committee. And one of those bills, probably most importantly, is a bill that would take a step toward reining in the ridiculous and rising costs of higher education in our state colleges in our state by making the transfer process more fair and equitable for Hoosier families, whether it be from Ivy Tech to one of the regional IU or Purdue campuses, or even one of the regional campuses to one of the main campuses. There are many Hoosiers that just simply can't afford to, families that can't afford to send their kids to our state colleges, so they might take a year at one of the regional campuses or Ivy Tech, and yet they find out at the end of that process that some of the credits that they acquire aren't transferred to the main campuses. And while this issue isn't one of the necessarily sexy topics that you hear a lot about in the media, I believe that higher education reform will be an issue that you will hear a lot about over the next 5 years as states wrestle with those costs and those issues. So issues like that, I mean, there are literally hundreds of issues that don't get a lot of attention in the media because everything else is overshadowed by right to work and some other controversial issues like the smoking ban. And I know the mass transit high-speed rail issue gets a lot of attention in the Indianapolis area. some of the local government reform efforts, all those issues get some attention, not quite like right to work, but yet there are literally hundreds of other important issues that are being tackled by legislators across the state.
Well, one issue that did catch a little bit of national buzz from Rolling Stone magazine I saw, and of course read here in the Indianapolis Star, there has been legislation to regulate the Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah, how about that?
I know Mark Warner has some incensed feelings about that. He actually puts aside his rhinoism and actually comes out against, you know, lesser government here. Where do you see that particular bill heading?
Well, we actually heard it in committee last week. I sit on the Education Committee, and it came before our committee. So that was an issue that I know a lot more about than what I did a week ago.
frankly, Indiana wouldn't be the only state.
I'm not sure about Mark and his rhino tendencies, but I think that at the end of the day, this bill has very good intentions. You know, there's nothing more disrespectful than butchering on purpose our national anthem. It's almost akin to, in many ways, to flag burning.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. So the intention of the legislation was it's akin to it. It's not as bad as that.
Yeah.
Just
okay.
to emphasize that point.
But
the comparison is there because it's that type of issue when you debate it. I mean, really, it comes down to whether or not you're for it or against it. If you think the government should get involved in preventing it, some of the same logic, some of the same debate. So, and I don't support either. I don't support flag burning. I don't support butchering our national anthem. So it was a very interesting debate. At the end of the day, even the author of the bill admitted that it's completely unenforceable. A $25 fine on someone who intentionally butchers the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
Even she admitted it's not enforceable. And so really, I think the debate comes down to that. I would probably vote against it on those grounds alone, and probably some other grounds too. But the author of the bill is from the southern part of the state. She's taken a lot of grief over raising the issue, but at the end of the day, it was an interesting debate.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jim, we've come to the end of our segment here, but I thank you for being on. Again, Indiana State Senator Jim Banks has been our guest this segment. Jim, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be with you. Take care.
All right. And you're listening to Gillespie on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hey there, FTR Radio fans. This is Josh Gillespie, host of Gillespie, airing every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. I want to tell you about the Shoutcast app. Download it to your favorite smartphone today. Then search for FTRradio.com. Never miss your favorite FTR show again. This is a must-have for any FTR listener. Download the Shoutcast app today.
6 out of 10 Republicans recommend FTR Radio to everyone they know. The other 4... are rhinos. FTR Radio. Online at FTRradio.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie. This segment promises to be an interesting one. Mark Warner is feeling a little bruised from last week's Ask a Rhino beatdown. How you doing, Mark?
I'm good, Josh. Tonight is going to be, I would like to say, epic.
Epic, really? Well, epic.
Because you, my friend, oh yeah, you guys bruised me last week just a little bit.
Well, for those who didn't catch last week's, here we go. Call's coming in. It's a surprise call.
Ha ha!
All right. Hold on here. All right. And welcome to Gillespie, mysterious caller. Who do we have on the line? Who is this week's rhino?
It's Media Lizzie.
Oh, no!
Hello, conservative boy.
Now, see, now this is wrong, because I like Lizzie. And Warner, I don't like you. So that just makes this really unfair.
Yeah. Oh, Josh, you...
He played the rhino chick card.
I can't beat up on a chick.
I know.
Goodness knows.
I know. You're a gentleman.
I am
a gentleman.
He plays
dirty, that Mark Warner, I'm telling you.
He is a filthy scoundrel is what he is.
But he's my filthy scoundrel, darn it.
He is. He is.
Oh, Josh.
Yeah. Yeah, wow.
How are you going to handle yourself tonight, buddy?
Well, with dignity and with class, because we have a lady on the line, Mark. How are you going to handle
you
yourself?
Me? She already knows how I behave, Josh.
Now, you see, this is shaping up to take me back. For those who don't know, I've started doing this regular weekly segment on a local Fox affiliate here in town, and my Democrat counterpart she's pregnant, and we have a good, we have a good sparring match. We're friends though, so we're friendly. But the segment used to take place in a boxing ring, and they've since done away with the boxing ring. They've kind of classed it up.
Pregnant. Yeah.
Well, and they said, and she's like, I'll bring back the boxing ring. I don't mind. It's like, how is this going to look for me that I verbally abuse a woman on television who is pregnant and in a boxing ring? That's just not good. That's not good.
Yeah. There are several levels of that image that are probably not awesome for you.
No, there aren't.
I don't know if you want those alphabetically or chronologically, but it's not awesome.
It's definitely not awesome. Well, before we get to what is inevitably going to be a probably a verbal skewering, how you doing, Lizzie?
I'm doing really good. I will preface our conversation in the inevitable SmackDown with the following. First of all, I love elections, and I love a presidential election year more than anything, except for my own child, because we can have them, which is something I think our folks sometimes forget.
That's true.
We don't like this guy, or we don't like that. That's all fine, well, and good, but at least we get to have elections, and if you vote, it actually matters.
That's right. If I called Mark Warner a rhino in some Eastern Bloc country, I might as well get my head shot off.
That's correct.
That can be arranged, Josh.
I'm sure it could, Mark. But this isn't.
Did I mention he's consulting to the Kremlin? Wait, no, I think that was a secret. My bad.
Oh.
Yeah, so Josh, don't travel to Moscow.
That's right, I won't. I'll keep that in mind. Well, you know, since this is Ask a Rhino, but the question was posed to Mark last week, and he didn't answer it, and I'm hoping he does this week.
Oh, wait a minute. I tried to answer it,
no?
But Brian kept talking, and so did Duke.
Now, Mark, why do you hate why do you hate America?
Josh.
Core.
I do not hate America.
Every week. Every day.
I do not hate America.
It's a proven fact that you hate America, especially in your pro-Ron Paul tweets. Lizzie, did you see this a couple weeks ago? It was the night of the Iowa caucuses. We talked
about you on tonight.
So let me just say this. Anything positive Mark has to say about Ron Paul, I cannot personally be responsible for. However, let me just note that Ron Paul may be occasionally right, just like a broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah.
But also like a broken clock, Ron Paul does not have the intellectual or emotional intelligence to be aware that he's correct twice a day.
Oh, now there's a twist on the old adage that I've never heard.
So just because the clock is right doesn't mean the clock has awareness that it's right, any more than Ron Paul has awareness that he's right on economic stuff. But here's the thing. All those folks are all up in Ron Paul's sauce. You don't actually have to be Ron Paul to add or subtract or divide or do any of the things that everybody thinks are so awesome about him. He's not necessary for there to be good math. If it was necessary for one guy to do math, then Einstein would never have died.
Good point. So again,
he's no Christopher Hitchens when it comes to being a wordsmith. Christopher Hitchens no longer being with us, that, said the Rhino, is an intense and profound loss. Ron Paul dropping out or being on the fringe, that's just the regular order of things.
Well, since we know what that
douchebag,
since we know that Christopher Hitchens was a godless soul, he's perfect for a Rhino, which I know that Mark Warner is. He's a godless soul. So he and Christopher Hitchens should have been tight.
I will tell you this.
He was a brilliant person, though. I'll give him that.
I don't think that he was godless.
Ooh.
Yeah. Careful, John.
I really don't.
Really?
I really don't. I think that he was a man without a God, but not a man without faith.
Interesting.
And as ever, he learned what the deal is before the rest of us.
See, here's why Lizzie is on the show and why she schools everyone she's around. She brings you bring a sense of intellectualism to this program that one hasn't been present since we relaunched last week.
So wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's a slam against myself. Honestly, I could admit that I'm not as smart as Lizzie because that was what she just said was.
Are you calling
that's mind blown?
Are you calling Duke and Brodigan stupid?
I'm not calling them stupid. I'm just saying that they cannot raise the level of discourse that is on this show currently to what Lizzie has just raised it to.
Oh, you're really sweet. Well, I'll tell you why I bring up him in the Rhino conversation is that especially in an election year when our people, whether they're conservatives or moderates or national security folks, nobody can really find anyone that they're just in love with on their own issues, let alone the rest of the issues that matter.
Amen, sister.
You know, what I will say is that when I look at somebody like Christopher Hitchens, who I disagreed with on a lot of stuff, but I also agreed with, what I like about elections, what I love about my country, are the same kinds of things that I loved about Christopher Hitchens, who was, in the end, an American, which I think is is a story that we need to remember. This is a man who, in the last 10 years of his life, he believed in things like we believe in things. You know, I have a dear friend I've been close to for a long, long time who I adore, who is who's a British guy, really smart, amazing, lovely person, and he loves this country and can't wait to have his citizenship and all kinds of stuff. And Hitchens was very much that way. You cannot be a faithless or godless person and love America that much. And
okay.
You know, I hate organized religion. There is no God, blah, blah, blah. And yet, in the last few days before his life, Christopher Hitchens, like any good American and in British intellectual, rocked the Nietzsche article. Now, Nietzsche is famous for saying God is dead. And what did Christopher Hitchens do? He deconstructed Nietzsche. Now, what happens when you deconstruct Nietzsche? Well, then you're saying maybe there is a God. And maybe there is goodness. Now, it's not said directly, but I think it's one of those things that, you know, unlike, you know, the crazy left, hardcore, cuckoo town atheists like Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens was always super in love with believers. He'd go to any church, he'd go anywhere to debate religion, theology, spirituality, faith, and everything else. You know, this is a guy who enjoyed the bacchanalia of life as much as he did anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, you know, he got what he wanted out of his entire life. He was an American. He passed away after his life being preserved long after his expiration date from cancer. And it's an election year. We need to remember what being American is about and who our president is supposed to be and what they're supposed to represent. A lot of folks on the hard right, just like this ridiculous group of evangelicals in Texas meeting this weekend and declaring how important they are, seem to not understand that they aren't the only people in the world that love the country. And they don't have the only path to success, and not every Republican is a conservative. Because they are the loudest does not mean they are the highest in number. If they were the highest in number, they would have a nominee. Out of 300 million people, they'd be able to find at least one male or female who had it together enough to represent them. So that they wouldn't have to send 150 people to Texas to say, so who's the lesser of all the crappy people we've got running?
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of all the crappy people we have left running, one of them dropped out, and John Huntsman, who was the Rhino's Rhino. I mean, how are you guys, how are the Rhinos taking this? Because, I mean, clearly... he is endorsed Mitt Romney, no shocker there. So he gets all of Mitt Romney now gets two more votes in each state than he did before, except for New Hampshire, which I from what I gather, John Huntsman was running for the presidency of the United States of New Hampshire.
Right. Yes. Yes, he was. Well, I will say that his rather bizarre. I wrote in Politico about him today, and I got to tell you, yeah, because you know I am a Rhino. Thank you very much.
Yes,
I
you are
in Politico. And I have to say, John Huntsman dropping out, first of all, yeah, not a surprise.
Yeah.
Second of all, he's not even really a Rhino. He's not even really a Democrat. The whole thing was this kind of weird mojo based on this kind of weird brew of, you know, service to my country. I say that with, you know, the obvious quotation mark.
I was going to say, because you actually did serve our country.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
Obscure music references, fluency in Mandarin Chinese, and this kind of weird reflexive defense of everything that China is about. I mean, like, dude, you're way too far to the... And he's anti-war.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this, oh, well, you know, maybe he's a conservative. I'm like, no.
He's not even...
I never understood the whole... I'm like, he's not even really a Republican any more than Ron Paul is. When you're anti-war and you're so far to the right that you're damn near left on mm-hmm. economic issues, yeah, you're not a Republican. You're not even a Rhino. Like, a Rhino is, I support gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you agree with us on everything else. At least you get to keep your registration card.
Yeah.
You know, when John Huntsman says, well, I'm pro-life... Well, not really, because, you know, I think of pro-life as being supportive of all life. You know, it's kind of an extension of equality, which you can't really redefine because either you believe people are equal or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And when John Huntsman was supporting President Bush and especially the China policies that were implemented on his 2 years watch as the ambassador to China and the senior advisor to the president on all things China, where they're funding and legitimizing genocide in Sudan via their express support for everything that China wants, he's not really a good American at that point. I mean, I think he's a bad citizen. I don't care how he's registered. Mm-hmm. I just don't want him to run for anything because it's embarrassing. It's shameful. It's an export out of America that I think does not reflect well on who we are as a people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. Wow. Again, see, Mark, you brought intellectualism, whereas I brought Brodigan and Duke. What? This segment is so much better than last week.
last week was a beat up Mark session, is what that was.
Well, and that was the redeeming quality of it.
you know what? You know what the problem is with you true conservatives?
What?
You guys always want to get redeemed or something. I don't know what the hell
What do you mean redeemed?
Yeah. Well, I brought again and Duke on to beat the shit out of Mark. Fine. Beat the shit out of me. But I'm going to tell you something. At the end of the day, you're going to come knocking on my door when you bitches are losing.
Hey, Mark, I don't, what are you talking about losing? I didn't have a candidate in this race.
You guys screw up everything.
What do you mean we screw up everything?
Screw up everything.
We do not screw up everything.
Yes, you do. When you guys want to throw someone in there to save the world, then their ass gets kicked. Who has to come clean up the mess? The Rhinos.
I'm looking for an example here, Mark.
Yes.
I'm looking for an example.
Well, Shall we start with 2000 and George W. Bush saving everybody's backside?
Who was the,
or should we go straight to 2004?
No, hold,
or,
hold on.
Or maybe 2008, when the only thing we had left was John McCain, who was the only person Rhinos put forward because all of the folks on the right said, don't worry, we've got 75% of the party. We got this.
Now, hold on.
And then
we
got John McCain.
Hold on.
So that wasn't our fault.
We can go back to 2000.
Because we all know that John McCain sucks. I can't stand John. I've never liked John McCain. I haven't liked John McCain since 1992.
No, I'm not going to argue the John McCain thing. What? Who was the true conservative in 2000 who ran?
Oh, I don't know. They had Pat Buchanan, didn't they?
Oh, gosh.
I'm sorry. Was that naughty? I think that was probably naughty.
That was naughty. And frankly, he ran in 92 as an independent. Yeah. Didn't he run as an independent or something? Or he tried.
Well, yeah, and that was when he did the, you know, in 2000 is when he did the press conference with Jimmy Hoffa. I mean, that's the problem with people I think of Ron Paul like I think of Pat Buchanan. You know, Pat Buchanan did this whole crap that Ron Paul is doing right now before Ron Paul ever thought about being Ron Paul.
But here's the thing.
On the presidential stage, because he got so far to the right on economic issues that one day we all woke up and he was doing a press conference with Jimmy Hoffa.
Isn't Pat Buchanan a mainstay on MSNBC?
He is.
He's no true conservative.
He's so far right, he's now left.
And that's the same
problem we have with Ron Paul. It's the crazy pants version of things, and then he's anti-war plus. When he's done in Congress, he's going straight to MSNBC.
You are bringing a conversation that I had with my hippie guitar instructor this evening full circle.
I live to serve.
Yes, you do. He says, man, I know you want to know how you Republicans can get to us? He's like, you know, he's like, Ron Paul. And he says, you know, and he says, you know, I got some liberal friends. I'm like, I'm not surprised. He's like,
out of town, a hippie guitar instructor with liberal friends.
Dude, I love my hippie guitar instructor. He is awesome. All right. That said, he says, you know, my liberal friends, you know, they love Ron Paul. I was like, you know, he's like the polar opposite of Barack Obama, right? He's like, you know, but they're so disenchanted with Barack Obama that they're going to go to Ron Paul. And they're like, you've come full circle. And Ron Paul's kind of at the end of that, you know, because he's not a conservative. He's not a Republican. I don't know where you're. He's, and my mind was actually just.
At his office.
It was a little wild there for a second. That's
the problem we have with the kind of cuckoo pants stuff. This is why when conservatives want to bring it, you know, they get very exasperated with rhinos. And I get that. I mean, I feel you. My father's a whole lot more conservative than I am in a lot of ways. In other ways, not so much. And I'm like, look, you know, stop telling me that you're 75% of the electorate. I want to see the deliverables on Election Day. If you can't bring them on Election Day, I'm not interested in hearing, well, we're loud. What if you're loud? I care if we've got somebody who's an adult who is worthy of being in the office of the presidency.
Well, 2010... It's
not just about beating Barack Obama. It's about deserving the confidence of the people so we can beat Barack Obama.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't true conservatives win the House back in 2010?
Yeah, but that's not the presidency.
It's not. No, because it wasn't up for election.
It's up the Senate race.
Well, but they didn't get the Senate. I will say this.
God damn.
Conservatives are very good at delivering small races. They
organize
well. Because
they represent the people. They represent the people.
It's not just about representing the people.
The House is the people's house. The Senate is a bunch of stuffy
people. It's not just about that, though. You got to win the White House.
Well, yes.
You got to have the Senate. You got to have. And here's the thing. And this isn't a knock on conservatives. It's just reality. Sometimes we have to understand what our best skill sets are. Conservatives know how to win state houses. They know how to win state senates. They know how to win statewide constitutional offices. They know how to win congressional seats.
Yes.
There's nobody better at it. You know, and my rhino friends can suck it. I'm just saying, there's nobody who knows how to organize better for those smaller races than a hardcore conservative grassroots group can. There just isn't. It's just the way it is. On the other hand, when it comes to running for the United States Senate or running for the presidency, rhinos just pwn. You know, they just pwn because they know where the money is. They know what it takes to get people confirmed through the Senate for cabinets. They know how to run the federal government on the executive branch side.
Now, hold on.
Our people are so concerned with fighting over the metrics instead of just taking the damn win. You're better at it. Jesus, go get me the rest of the seats in the House. Are you shitting me? That's the best thing in the world. If you're better at that than everybody else, then go do that.
Look what
and
happened.
Stop worrying about who's on the Senate ballot. Go get me 300 seats, and then you can run the House. And then no matter what the Senate does, you got this. Take the win. Oh, my God. And when rhinos go and do their thing, and if they do it better, then shut up and take the win. And if they don't, fine, then do better. But stop complaining. It's so lame.
I will say this, last week's segment was proof of it, that rhinos have so little of a spine that they tend to will go with the conservatives because they're the ones who are winning. Correct?
Well, and we'll vote. I vote a whole lot more conservative than I actually am.
Oh. And President,
because I'd rather, if we're going to talk about negotiations in the House on a bill, mm-hmm. or we're going to talk about negotiations in the Senate, this is the dirty little secret most rhinos won't tell you.
Oh.
If I want somebody, where we start negotiations is what matters on mm-hmm. appropriations.
Uh-huh, exactly.
So I want I'm always going to be where the policy ends up almost all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get to where I'm at? Well, you damn sure better have somebody to my right. Because if we start where I'm at and then negotiate, the right is going to get screwed every time. So I always vote to my right. Every time. There's not a year in my life I haven't voted to my right.
See, Mark, doesn't that tell you who actually does win?
Josh,
vote to your right. Vote to your right.
Which? Do I need?
Vote to my right, and then you know what? When we get to negotiations on policy, and everybody's mad, they're like, "Well, the rhinos," and I'm like, "It's not that the rhinos are giving you up for anything. It just happens to mean that we know where the negotiations are going to end up because we always end up being right. It doesn't make it good, you know." Everybody needs to understand good doesn't necessarily mean right. Being right just means you're right, that you called the shot correctly.
So what
that
you're
doesn't mean that it's good policy. It just means that that's where we're going to end up.
So what you're saying is,
unless you're realistic about the left, you know, all the jumping up and down about being mad at rhinos isn't going to get one damn seat.
What you're saying, though, is that both sides basically need each other.
Hell yeah!
And so if we can cooperate, and you give the true conservatives the House, which is where they can get all up on the floor and scream and yell and do what they need to do, because that's how the House operates. And
oh, yeah, and they're better at it. And let me just be clear. They're better at it than rhinos.
They are.
FYI. So, you know, I just want to make sure everybody hears that, because mm-hmm. they're better at it. They just are.
So, okay, let's take an example. Shall we? Let's take the first year and a half, because I'm trying to remember when Jim Jeffords switched.
Yes.
Yeah, talk.
Jim Jeffords.
since you were part of the Bush administration.
Yeah.
You know what it was like to have control of everything. Not only,
it was awesome.
It was awesome. You had a very true conservative House, and you had a
yep.
very staid, I wouldn't even call it rhino-ish, but a very staid Senate with Bill Frist at the head. There wasn't a whole heck of a lot of excitement, except for when Jeffords pulled the old switcheroo.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't hot. It was just, you know, very, yeah, staid is the right word.
Yeah.
Very chill.
It was chill. So how did that dynamic work with a true conservative House and Bill Frist? I mean, because they're putting stuff together to come to, you know, with the president.
Bill Frist made a lot of hardcore grassroots conservatives mad because he called them on their shit. he did. I mean, he made people mad because you couldn't argue with his conservative credentials.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody on the right likes to have a punch list so that they can play gotcha, because that's more interesting than doing the job.
I think Jim DeMint has one of those lists.
Yeah, he does.
Handy
and
at all times.
Which is why I don't like him at all and never have, ever. You will never find me on the record saying Jim DeMint is awesome, because he isn't. He's a self-important dweeb like every other member of the Senate. And yeah, I don't get it. All of this genuflecting over Jim DeMint. Are you kidding me? Please.
Jim DeMint is one of the conservatives.
Yeah.
Oh.
And, you know, but Bill Frist had his little punch list.
Yeah.
And it made them mad, because when he called people out on being pro-life, on being into individual liberty and freedom, you know, he was like, well, that's great, but we are also going to make sure that in preventative, we apply that principle to preventative foreign policy,
mm-hmm.
so that we aren't spending money on war all the time, but so we're doing preventative measures.
Yeah.
Like helping to end the genocide in Darfur, like expanding the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, PEPFAR,
mm-hmm.
and all of these things, which a lot of conservatives are like, that's just a waste of money. Well, yeah, if you're only obsessed with domestic issues and you can pretend and genuinely convince yourself that if we only ever stay inside our borders, Ron Paul, that nothing bad will ever happen. It's a total Valley Girl approach to reality.
Mm-hmm.
And when Bill Frist pushed back, yes, they eventually gave in. Yes, PEPFAR got started. Yes, we went from 50,000 people on the continent of Africa getting antiretrovirals to more than 4 million today, thank you to George W. Bush, the then Republican Senate and the then Republican House.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't like it, and they went into it kicking and screaming. And they were so excited when W. left and when Bill Frist was gone, because then they thought they'd never, ever have to do that again. Well, here's what happens when you take the money away and you've got Nancy Pelosi as Speaker, Harry Reid as the head majority leader at the Senate, and Barack Obama as President.
Mm-hmm.
We dial all of that aid away, or not all of it, but a significant portion of that spending has been, you know, taken away from those programs. And what do we have? We have new genocide in Sudan. We have multiple new genocides, all kinds of war crimes. We have defunding of the AIDS relief programs, which then means that we're going to have we can have more pandemic spreading of one of the most virulent viruses that spreads the globe. And then you have all kinds of other problems that are now starting to pop up all across Africa in the wake of the Arab Spring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can either spend money on the front end to make friends with people so that they won't try and kill you, and that they won't allow other people who will feed them, like Hamas and Hezbollah, because the number one deliverer of weapons on the ground in a place like Sudan is Hamas and Hezbollah. And guess where all those weapons come from? Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bill Frist understood this. George W. Bush understood this. The Republican House at the time understood this. You know, and it's not easy for me to give props to Denny Hastert or Tom DeLay, but it's true. It happened on their watch. And so, excuse me while I swallow the little bit of vomit in my mouth, but they all did the right thing.
Uh-huh.
And they all did the right thing, and it prevented us from having problems. Now what do we have? We have Barack Obama putting people on the ground from AFRICOM in South Sudan, in Uganda, and elsewhere, trying to find the bad guys who are trafficking weapons and drugs and money for al-Shabaab and other al-Qaeda affiliates on the Horn of Africa. Why? Why is that even necessary? Oh, right, because we reversed all of those gains that were made during the Bush years under Republican House and a Republican Senate with a Republican president. So when our people have got to take off their domestic-only blinders and say, gee, do we want to spend a little money now, or do we want to spend $6 trillion later? People can be mad, but, well, yeah, but you don't really know. Yes, I do. So I can give you $6 trillion today just with a simple piece of math.
Mm-hmm.
In 1993, we had the Black Hawk Down episode, which everybody is, you know, pretty well familiar with.
Yeah.
The target of that operation was a man named Mohammed Farah Aidid. And we didn't get him. And he was an advisor and a trafficker for two very prominent people, Omar Hassan al-Bashir, the president of Sudan, who had just taken over 4 years ago in a violent coup, and Osama bin Laden, who probably doesn't need a bio. So,
yeah.
Just a guess.
Yeah.
And we didn't go back. Bill Clinton, much like Reagan did, which is why I don't, you know, everybody just thinks Reagan is awesome. I'm like, yeah, I remember Beirut. Bite me.
Ouch. That just hurt my true conservative ears.
Yeah, I know.
I think they actually started bleeding.
You're going to need muscle relaxers after that one. I'm just saying. And, you know, he ran. He ran just like, he did exactly the same thing Reagan did. Reagan said, we're not going to let this stand. We're going to stay. We're going to fight. We're going to make it better. And then 24 hours later, he was ordering everybody out of the embassy. So, whatever. And Bill Clinton did the same thing. Withdrew all our troops, no more humanitarian aid. Now, mind you, they were put in by his predecessor to help supply humanitarian aid and help get rid of the violent Islamists on the ground, you know, known as Osama bin Laden and Omar Hassan al-Bashir, mm-hmm. because they were bad dudes. They were universally known as bad dudes. So all this BS about, well, nobody really knew who they were. Well, the President of the United States knew.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure that's the most important person to know. And if he said, these guys are douchebags, we need to go get them, I'm thinking probably more than other people knew.
Yeah.
More than a few. We didn't do anything. So what happens because Osama bin Laden got a stay? The first World Trade Center bombing, the embassy bombings, 9/11, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq. Well, guess what? When you add all of those things up together,
mm-hmm.
what do you get? About $6 trillion in spending.
Two.
And about $6 trillion, you know, you get all of that stuff plus, you know, idiotic policies with Hurricane Katrina, and bam, you've got $6 trillion back.
Mm-hmm.
So when people are concerned about the budget, we have got to look long-term. If we had killed Osama bin Laden, if we had just stayed, forget going and hunting him down and all that other crap that people like Richard Binetter say. If we had just stayed then, if we had just killed Osama bin Laden, yeah, I said it, killed. If we had just killed him then,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of bombing the aspirin factory in Sudan, if we had killed Omar Hassan al-Bashir then,
mm-hmm.
then we would have saved 2 million lives minimum in Sudan. There never would have been an opportunity for him to commit a genocide.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have prevented a huge genocide then, the current genocide that is now underway on Barack Obama's watch,
mm-hmm.
and we would have saved ourselves $6 trillion.
Ooh.
So it matters what we do in our preventative measures.
Yeah.
So when I, you know, get up on my conservative friends, I'm like, I get you. I understand. It's not like it's fun to go and fight a war. It's not like it's awesome to send special forces teams to Africa over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It's a whole lot better to be smart about how we do our aid spending instead of saying, well, I'm going to stop all of it.
Yeah.
Well, that's just insane, because then you're telling an enemy. Because if we think that killing bin Laden was the last bad guy we've got to go after for a generation, whoever the next bin Laden is, we better find him, and he should die. And he should die right now.
Yes. Yes, he should.
Because otherwise, it's another $6 trillion that we don't have.
Goodness. That's.
Just saying.
No. That's definitely putting a fine point on it. Basically.
Yeah, that's 8,000 American soldiers who'd be home today just in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind the almost 2,000 a year, every year from 1993 until 2003 when we went in, or 2001 when we went into Afghanistan. Now that includes thousands of people that are buried in Arlington National Cemetery and all over the country. I can tell you our family would have really appreciated handling that any time between 1993 and April 4th of 1998 when I lost the love of my life.
Hmm.
So when people say, oh, well, you know, that's esoteric. No, it's not esoteric in our family.
Mm-hmm.
And for my friend who just got back from Africa and is getting ready to go back, it's not esoteric for his family.
Mm-hmm.
And for friends who work in other arenas in the military and in intelligence complexes, it's not esoteric for them either. Much easier to spend small dollars, aid dollars, figure out who the bad guys are and kill them than it is to spend $6 trillion on stuff that none of us want to do.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hate to do it, but unfortunately, I have to cut my interview with Lizzie short. But tune into the podcast. You'll be able to hear the rest of the interview. We just had a few minutes more. It's a great discussion with her, but we've come up to the end of the show. Anyway, I want to thank my guest tonight, Surprise Rhino, Elizabeth Blackney, a.k.a. Media Lizzie, also Indiana State Senator Jim Banks. I also want to point out the artists that were featured this evening in the bumper music, primarily Andy Ziff. Big time thanks to Andy, who is located in the D.C. metro area. Check him out if you're there. Also, songs from Soul Food 76 and the 5 O'Clock People. You're listening to Gillespie. Stay tuned for a live edition of The Snark Factor with Fingers Malloy. We'll be back next week. Tune in then, 9 o'clock every Tuesday night with Gillespie. Stay tuned for The Snark Factor.
Don't speak like we used to. And where do we go?